Well, it's a great privilege to be here tonight to speak at this outstanding parish and school to both the parents of the children of the school as well as the parents of the religious ed. So the topic tonight is, I think, a rather fascinating and interesting one, and it's called How to Raise Happy, Healthy, Holy Children. Okay, it's quite a task. But those three ideas on being happy, healthy, and holy really represent the three dimensions of our lives. The happiness represents our emotional well-being, our emotional health. The healthy represents our physical well-being, the well-being of the children. And then holy represents our spiritual well-being. So we're going to cover tonight, I'm going to give you a lot of practical ideas on how to raise kids in a happy, healthy, and holy way. Now, people might say, well, how can a priest talk about those things? Well, basically, I love children. I once went to school with them, and I've been involved with youth work for the past 8 years as a priest. I was ordained in 1990. Father Pokorsky and I are classmates, in fact. So I think he's stationed here at Holy Spirit. And over the last 8 years, I've worked quite a bit with young families. I've done about 40 weddings a year, so I've done over 300 weddings, baptized over 1,000 kids, and I've been to thousands of homes, had dinner with thousands of families, and my own sister and her husband have 4 little kids, ages 5, 4, and 3, and 1. So I'm around kids quite a bit, and so I've learned a few things from my own parents and from my sister and her husband and from so many of the people that I've been working with over the last couple years. In fact, the first parish I was in, we didn't have a cook for the first 4 years. And so every night of the week, I was at a different home for dinner. I would tell them that I'd come over and bless their house, and a dinner time was the best time for me. And so I was able to work it out. So I visited all these homes. So mostly what I've learned is from parents themselves, from what I've seen, from what they've shared with me of ideas that's worked for them. So people just like yourselves have shared these ideas with me. Now, kids are, as you know, just wonderful gifts of God. They're also quite humorous. Somebody sent me an email the other day, and a little joke. It said, a little boy is standing at a front door, jumping up over and over, trying to push the doorbell. The parish priest, on his daily walk, spots the child and goes over to him. Can I help you with that? The priest asks. Sure, the kid replies. So the priest pushes the doorbell. After a second, he asks the boy, what do we do next? And the boy replies, run. So kids are amazing. They're so much fun. There was a little boy who was at dinner with his grandfather. His grandfather was invited over for dinner. And the little boy says, Grandpa, when are you going to do your frog imitation? And the grandfather says, frog imitation? Yeah, the boy says, yeah, Mom says, when you croak, we'll all be rich. So sometimes kids can say some things that could be a little bit embarrassing. And somebody sent me an email the other day that said, be good to your children. They'll be choosing your nursing home. Isn't that cute? So the first part of the talk, really, there's just three parts on happiness, health, and then holiness. The first part has to do with happiness, how to raise children that will be emotionally healthy. And, of course, the first and fundamental thing that every child needs is love. Love is the most important ingredient in any family because love develops the feeling of security, and kids want security. And so the first ingredient that all parents need to give their kids is unconditional love, the kind of love that God has for us. Not just loving us because we're good, but loving us no matter what. Unconditional love is what builds high self-esteem in the children. When children know and feel that they're loved and valued, that's when they have high self-esteem. So some practical things you can do to show unconditional love to your children is one is through words, also through actions, and another one is by spending time. Let me mention a few things about the words that you can say. Words are so powerful in the life of a person. One word can change a person's whole life. You know, one word said at the right time a word of praise or encouragement could make all the difference in a person's life. I'd encourage you to praise your child's good qualities. If you ever see an act of kindness or an act of unselfishness or an act of charity that a child does to a brother or sister, praise that. Praise their good qualities. Praise their virtues. Praise their generosity or their patience or their acts of kindness or charity. And another way, one way to praise also that works very well is praising through other people. There's a saying that when you're talking directly to your kids, a lot of times they're not listening. But if you're talking about them when they're in another room, I guarantee it, they're all ears. When you're on the phone talking to your friend down the street and you happen to mention their name, I guarantee it, they're listening. And that's a great way to build character and self-esteem and virtue in your children by saying to, let's say, your husband when he's at work or your friend when they're on the phone, "You should have seen what my daughter Rachel did today. She was so nice to the neighborhood girl." Or, "She was so generous in sharing with her brother." Or, "My child is going to be so wonderful when she grows up." You know, praising the child when you're talking to another person, I think, is double the praise, and it really goes a long way. So words are very powerful. And praise, of course, they say, has to be done in three ways. It should be sincere, because people can see through if it's not sincere. So primarily, praise has to be sincere. It's helpful if praise is specific, not just general. But some is praising a specific quality or virtue or good characteristic in a child. And third, praise should be immediate, soon after the good deed was done. If you wait a week, sometimes it's not quite as effective. So they say timing is everything. You know, one rose given on the day of the anniversary is worth a dozen given a week later. Isn't that the case? Words like, "I love you," "I'm proud of you," can really fill their emotional tanks. Mark Twain once said he could survive 2 months on just one good compliment. That's all he needed. Now, Ken Blanchard wrote a book a couple years ago called The 1 Minute Manager. Has anybody read that book? Well, Spencer Johnson wrote a book called The 1 Minute Father, which takes the same ideas of management and applies it to the kids. And in that, he says, catch your children doing something right. Okay, isn't that a great idea? If you see them doing something good, notice it, praise them, and give them special recognition for that. Also, have positive expectations for your children. Let them know that you believe that God will do great things with them and through them in the future, that they'll grow up to be outstanding people. There was a study done not too long ago of prisoners, and it was found that 85% of the men in prison today were told when they were younger that they would never amount to anything and they would wind up in prison one day. 85%. Isn't that something? See, kids tend to fulfill our expectations. If we have good, positive expectations, they tend to fulfill them. And yet, if we have negative expectations, they will tend not to disappoint us either. Another way to share good, positive feedback with the kids is writing little notes of recognition. If they've cleaned their room, you know, write a little note to them so they find it when they come back home saying, "You did such a beautiful job of cleaning your room and helping out." Or, "You did a beautiful job, you know, doing the dishes or putting a new roof on the house," or whatever you had them do that particular day. One thing is, never reinforce a negative quality. I've heard parents do this in front of their children. They'll say, "This is my son or daughter, the messy one." You know? And so basically that's what I call watering the weeds. So every child is like a garden, and the good, positive things are growing, like the virtues. I call these the flowers that are growing. And we want to water the flowers instead of watering the weeds. But if we say, "Oh, this is my messy child," or, "Father, I'd like you to introduce my son. He's very shy." You know, when he says it in front of the kid, that will reinforce that into the child. So just be aware of that. I've seen that so many times over the last 8 years when I visit people, that in front of the kids, they'll say things which is basically watering the weeds, because they don't want their child to be messy, for example, and yet they'll reinforce that and say, my kid never cleans up his room, Father. Can you bless his room with extra strength holy water? And I say, I have just the holy water for you. So water the flowers and not the weeds. Look for the good in your child. They say if we look for the good in people, we'll find it. If we look for the bad in people, we'll find that too. So our mind is like a camera lens. Whatever we focus on, whatever we think about and focus on, will come to light. So it's important for us to look for the child's good qualities, look for that nugget of gold. And they say sometimes you have to move a lot of dirt to find that nugget of gold. But once you find that, then you can draw upon this and look for the good and then capitalize on that. Some kids are very good at music. Some are very good at sports. Some are very good in other ways. Find the strengths and capitalize on it. There's a book out, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's an outstanding book. I encourage everybody to read it. I've read it about 8 times. I try to read it once a year because the principles in that are so important, and sometimes we get rusty on these valuable principles of how to get along with people. And one of the things Dale says in there is never criticize, condemn, or complain. Isn't that a good rule? Avoid these 3 words. Never criticize, never condemn, and never complain. So if you can remember one thing from the first part of this talk, is avoid negative criticism with your kids. Obviously, you'll need to tell them, you know, what to do and how to do it in a very loving and kind way, but negative criticism, there's no place for it, really. And so avoid criticizing, condemning, and complaining. And the 4th C I'd like to add is comparing. You know, oftentimes we can fall into the trap of comparing our kids to somebody else's kids, or saying, oh, you're not as smart as your brother, or if only you were as good as your sister. And that doesn't do much good. In fact, I think it does a great deal of harm. So avoid criticizing, condemning, complaining, comparing, and instead give sincere, genuine compliments, give praise, and especially praise them for the specific acts that they do, praise them immediately, praise them sincerely, and praise the good qualities, the virtues, the flowers that you want to have grow in the soil of their soul. Of course, listening is a very important thing. They say listening is really one of the most important ingredients to being a good communicator and in having a relationship with your children, listening to them. But what about actions? How can we, through your actions, show your love for your children? Well, primarily affection and hugs. One Christian psychiatrist said, a child needs 4 hugs a day for survival, 8 hugs a day for mental health, and 12 hugs a day for emotional growth. So leave here tonight with a decision that you're going to give your kids about 12 hugs a day. Hugs, again, fills their emotional tank. An interesting study said that up to the age of 1, boys receive the same amount of affection as girls from their parents. But after they turn 1, they only receive 1/6 of the amount of affection and hugs as girls receive. And you know what? Boys get into trouble about 6 times more than girls. And some are saying there must be a correlation between these 2 things. Oftentimes, giving the physical hug to your children, holding them, that does a tremendous amount of good to show their love, to show your love for them, where they actually not only know that you love them, but they feel loved from you as parents. And then there's time, spending time with their kids. And there's a great myth today thinking that, well, I don't have much quantity time with the kids, but I'll spend a lot of quality time with the kids. Well, Brian Tracy, an international speaker on sales and management, says that's a fallacy. He says you can't have quality time unless you have quantity time. The quality moments come in the quantity time. And so what we should aim for is spending quality time as well as quantity time with the kids. My sister and her husband always try to get their kids involved in the different things that they're doing, whether it be helping to clean up some of the things that are on the ground, even with cooking, with stirring the pot, you know, stirring the mashed potatoes, or helping maybe with some of the folding of the laundry, because now the oldest is almost 6, and then age almost 4, and then 3 and 1. So the older ones can help. And this actually does build their self-esteem when they're participating, when they're helping mom and dad, then they feel that they're needed and useful, and they learn different skills, and this is a great way to to do family things, because the kids want to feel a part of the family. So it's a great way to build self-esteem and to spend some family time together. One other idea is that it's important to take your kids out on a date, just with you and one of the kids. So my parents used to do this with us when we were growing up. My dad would take me out, and we'd just go fishing for the day, just the two of us. We had that special time with father and son. Or my mom would spend time with one of my sisters. And that one-on-one time makes a big difference. Because the kids act differently when they're with all their brothers and sisters. If you get them separate, you can get to know them so much better. And take them out to a special place that they'd like to go, maybe a museum or a particular park that they'd like to go to. So this has been very helpful in my family, and I pass it on to you for what it's worth. Also, I found that in talking to parents, they've told me, they say, Father, the time that they find the best to spending time with their kids is right before the kids go to sleep. When the kids are tucked in and sitting on the side of the bed as a mom or a dad, that's such a powerful time. The first hour of the day and the last hour of the day is a time when kids are most receptive to new information. It's when we can make most changes in our life. At the first hour and the last hour of the day, because the kids are wide open. And so if you can read them stories about Jesus, read them stories about the saints, talk to them, find out how the day was, even 10 minutes at night, sitting there on the side of their bed, might be worth a half hour or 45 minutes sometime during the day when the TV's on and when there's a lot of distractions. So I encourage you to do this. Another idea is also to wake the kids up lovingly. You know, so many times we just run into the room and say, wake up, and you pour a bucket of cold water on them. It's time for school. And if you can just sit by their bed and, you know, stroke their hair and wake them up slowly, sometimes that can help them get into a better frame of mind during the rest of the day. I remember growing up, my mom would come in and wake us up for school, and she would sit there by the side of the bed, wake us up very gently, and then she would say the morning offering. And that helped us to begin the day with a prayer. So in this first section, really, a lot of it really is your attitude towards your kids. And what the great authors say is that you need to have profound respect for your children, that they are an incredible gift from God, that they are entrusted to you from God, and that the greatest things you could give for them is for you to honor them, for you to value them, and for you to see their dignity. This is what Pope John Paul II says, to see the dignity of each and every human person, to begin with your child. See the dignity that they are made in the image and likeness of God, and they're truly a gift from God. And so honor and respect for them will go a long way. Now, a couple other tips that people have said, whether it be on their tapes or in their books, is that some of them have said, try to separate the person from the behavior. You've probably heard that. You know, try to never say, oh, you're a bad kid, of course. But if they do something wrong, say, you know, we love you so much, but we didn't like what you did. You see how you're sort of separating the person from maybe their bad behavior. So some of the writers say that that's a valuable thing to do. And then another thing is to realize that every child is different as far as their personality and their temperament. There's a great book out about the four temperaments. So your child is either a sanguine, choleric, melancholic, or phlegmatic. Florence Littauer, a great Christian speaker, has written a great deal about how to interpret and how to decide and find out which temperament your child is. And so you can learn that, and that could go a long way in helping to raise them. Now, one other thing that's sort of in this under this topic, and I'm sure you have to deal with this, is the television. Now, TV is something that is really raising many of our kids, and so you really have to be very careful, I believe, of the role of the television. See, television is morally neutral. It can be used for great good or for great harm. You can watch wonderful documentaries and good things, good religious programming. Mother Angelica has quite a few wonderful programs, and you can use it for great good, or it can be used for negative. And so basically it's like money. Money can be used for great good or for great harm. So I encourage you to make sure it's being used in your family for great good. And also realize it's not just the content that could be harmful to your child, but actually the whole medium is also harmful. If you've read some of the books that are out there, like The Plug-In Drug or Endangered Minds, I have copies of those back there, you'll see that a lot of the educators are saying that because it makes a child merely passive and they just sort of sit there and are not able to use their imagination and their creativity and their thinking ability, that it has other harmful effects, not just the content. So I would encourage you to examine that whole issue and really see what you want to do about that, because obviously there is a lot of content that is not too beneficial out there for them to watch, but also the whole medium, the whole format, the way it comes across can have effects upon the kids as well. And oftentimes parents will use television as a babysitter and just think, okay, well, I have to do this or just watch this. And of course, sometimes that needs to be done or can be done, but it's just something to keep in mind. So many parents have shared with me that when they've cut back on the television in the family, the kids' reading has improved, the conversation has improved in the family, and so there's been a lot of blessings to following the bumper sticker that says, you know, kill your television. I'm sure you've seen that. There was a study a couple years ago where they had a controlled environment where they had kids watching, you know, Mr. Rogers for a couple hours, and then they had other kids watching violent, you know, things like Ninja Turtles and other kinds of fighting kinds of cartoons. And then they put all these kids together in a room. You know what happened? The poor kids that were watching Mr. Rogers got beat up by the kids watching the more fighting cartoons. So keep in mind that what the kids take into their mind certainly does affect them. And the last point in this is that many of the parents I've talked to say, well, what we need, Father, as a husband and wife, is to work together as a team. So I encourage you, as a husband and wife, not to be leading the kids in opposite directions, but working together as a team. Zig Ziglar says, team is spelled T-E-A-M. Together, everyone achieves more. And you can get so much more done as a team than you could as an individual. Zig tells a story of the Belgium horses. See, a Belgium horse individually can pull 8,000 pounds of freight. But when they're harnessed together, when two of them are harnessed together, when they're pulling in the same direction, they can pull 32,000 pounds of freight. Isn't that amazing? You would think they could only pull 16,000. But when they work together as a team, they can pull 32,000. So I encourage you to keep that in mind as an analogy for husband and wife in working as a team, as a unit, and bringing the children in the same direction can go a long way. Now the second part is on healthy. This is sort of a shorter segment because it's really on the physical well-being of the children. And I'm sure most of you know these things. I've talked to many doctors and educators about this, and I say, you know, what are the three or four most important things you need to do to raise healthy kids, you know, physically healthy kids? And they basically boil it down to three or four things: proper nutrition, proper rest, and proper exercise, and a few other things. So with nutrition, a lot of the experts are saying that it's so important for the kids to have a good, healthy breakfast. I'm sure you've seen that. I'm sure you've noticed that. And that the things to cut back on would be, of course, sugar. I'm sure the kids are still bouncing off the walls after Halloween, right? If you notice, after Halloween, the kids are just oftentimes very irritable because of all the sugar highs. And so the experts say that if we cut back on anything, we should cut back on sugar for the kids, on things containing a lot of fat, things containing a lot of salt, and caffeine. And those things are probably the most harmful that we can to give to the children. And, for example, they said maybe instead of drinking soda, have the kids drink water or other kinds of juices. So anything you can do to cut back on the sugar intake will be a great blessing, according to what these experts say. They also say that when the kids are eating sugar all day long, they really never know their own personal temperaments or personality, because they're always on the high or a low. They're always excited or crashing. And so if you really want to see what the kids are like normally, try not giving them sugar for quite a while and observe and see how that they're affected. So they recommend plenty of water, drinking plenty of water throughout the day. Perhaps vitamins, things like that would be have been recommended. Of course, eating a balanced diet, plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, Jim Rohn says, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. What if that's true? What if that saying is true, an apple a day keeps the doctor away? There are some that say a Hershey bar a day. Yeah, that's their philosophy, a Hershey bar a day. It might not seem bad, you know, after a week or after a month, but try it after 5 years. See how things accumulate. You know, an apple a day can make a big difference in the kids. Healthy snacks, you know, instead of M&Ms, you know, try raisins or grapes and things like that. And basically cutting back on things like the candy and the sugar products can make a big difference. And instead replacing these things with the fruits, the vegetables. Many of the experts are saying, you know, try to eat less red meat and more lean proteins like chicken and fish. And then cutting back on things like caffeine and so much of the like chocolate and the kids are drinking, you know, Cokes and Jolts and Surge these days. I mean, these kids are taking a lot of these substances into their bodies. And so oftentimes it's hard for them really even to get to know what their own personality is like because they're having to deal with all these highs and lows in their bloodstream. Brian Tracy did a good program once called Science of Self-Confidence, and in that he has a whole tape on health. And he calls, he says, avoid the three white poisons. He says, white sugar, white flour, you know, bleached flour, and salt. And he says, if you can just cut back on those three things in your family, products with white sugar, products with bleached flour, and things with a lot of salt, and replace these with other things like the fresh fruits and vegetables and lean proteins and more fiber products and more cereals and things like that, he says that can make a tremendous difference in your family and in raising kids. There's a book I read a couple years ago I found quite helpful called Fit for Life. Some of you have probably read it. I'd recommend it. I found it quite helpful. Now also, your example will make a big difference in the life of your kid. And as far as your alcohol intake and things like smoking, these things will make a big difference as far as how you handle these particular things. So don't underestimate the power of example. There's a saying, your example speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you say. Isn't that a great phrase? So example is just so powerful. So after nutrition, the experts say proper rest is so important to raising healthy kids. Namely, making sure they have enough sleep, a good night's sleep, get to know how much sleep your kids need. And one of the things that bothers kids a lot these days is nightmares, okay? And you know why? A lot of it's because of what they've been watching on TV, and a lot of these teenagers are reading Stephen King novels right before they go to sleep. I'd have a nightmare too if I was reading that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've blessed a lot of houses, you know, I've blessed thousands of homes, and when I'm going through the house with the parents, you know, blessing the rooms, I see the posters these kids have on their walls, you know, of all sorts of creatures and things from different fantasy games and Dungeons and Dragons and all this stuff. And I'd have nightmares too if I was looking at these posters as well right before you go to sleep. And also, what a person takes into their mind an hour before bedtime goes on many, many repeats, many times in the subconscious throughout the night. And so it's important that the hour before bedtime that they're not watching scary things on TV or reading scary things. One thing that some of the young families have recommended, they said have been helpful if they are afraid and if they need a nightlight, is get one of those religious nightlights. You ever see those? They have like the little statue of the Blessed Mother or the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And that way it lights up the room. And if they wake up, they're reassured they see the Blessed Mother or Jesus. And it's so important to share with them right before they go to sleep with reassuring good stories and positive stories. And then the other experts say that exercise is so important for kids. And fresh air, sunshine, and this I'm sure the kids are getting in soccer and swimming and tennis and dance and other kinds of sports. But they say exercise at least 3 times a week, 20 minutes a day, can do so much in reducing stress. Another point that has been recommended to me by different doctors is make sure, especially during the winter, that the kids are dressed warm enough. If I go to these football games, I see these teenagers out there with a t-shirt that's like 40 degrees out there, or they're just wearing a flannel shirt and huge baggy pants. You know, these, and so no wonder they catch pneumonia or catch a cold so easily. So keep that in mind as the winter is approaching, to make sure the kids are at least wearing a nice warm coat and that they actually zip it up. Because it's the way some of the kids dress, it's no wonder that they come home after a football game when they start coughing and pretty soon they're sick. So I'd encourage you to read and study nutrition and health. I always recommend trying the natural way first, but trust your own judgment through your own reading and research. So study this topic yourself, which I'm sure you have, and realize that there are basically only, you know, half a dozen things you need to do to raise physically healthy children. Now lastly, what about holy children? What about the spiritual health of the children? Obviously, you want the best for your child emotionally, you want the best physically, and I'm sure you want the best spiritually. It always saddens me when I meet a family. Usually they're not Catholic families, but they say, well, you know, Father, I say, like, is your kid baptized? And they say, no, we're going to wait till he or she is 14 and let him make his own decision. Yeah. And to me, it just never made sense that, you know, what if they said, well, I'm not going to send my child to school when he's 14. If he wants to go to school, I'll let him make his own decision. Or I'm not going to give my child anything to eat. When he's old enough, he can decide if he wants to eat. Of course, you'd never do that, you know, for your child's physical well-being or emotional well-being. Well, spiritual well-being is even more important because the body will eventually die, but the soul lives forever. Every one of us has an immortal soul that will one day come before God. It will live forever. And so the importance of the soul is of infinite value. Now, the first and most important aspect of raising holy children is your own personal relationship with God. Everything is dependent upon your holiness, your relationship with God. What is your relationship with God like? Is it a good, solid relationship? Is it a life of prayer? Do you have a life of spirituality, of going to the sacraments, of going to Mass every weekend, of trying to grow in virtue, of following the Church's teachings on issues such as family life and marriage and those issues? There's a great analogy of the airplane. Those of you who have flown lately, you know, right before you go up, they have the flight attendant show you about, you know, putting on the mask in case the plane is going down. What do they say? They say, in case of emergency, put on your own mask first, and then what? And then assist your children. And that's how it is in the spiritual life. You can't raise holy children unless you yourself are trying to grow in holiness, trying to grow closer to God through your own life of prayer, going to the sacraments, going to regular confession, going to Mass. Hal Roach once said, he's an Irish comedian, he said, you know, those masks, he said, there's nothing in there. He said, they're just to muffle your screams. Isn't that great? You know, there's a book called The Soul of the Apostolate, which is all about the importance of prayer. And in that, it made a very interesting point. It has to do with a priest and a pastor, but it applies to parents as well. It says, if the pastor is a saint, the parishioners will be holy. If the pastor is holy, the parishioners will be good. If the pastor is good, the people will be decent. If the pastor is decent, the people will be godless. Isn't that something? Now, how does that apply to parents? Well, if the parents are saints, the children will be holy. If the parents are holy, the children will be good. If the parents are good, the children will be decent. If the parents are decent, the children will be godless. And that's what we have in our society, is children being raised in just basically, you know, average or decent families, but the kids are not practicing the faith and not living their faith. Realize the Church says that you are the primary educators of your children. This is all throughout the Church documents. that don't leave it up to religious ed, which is only 1 hour a week, or a Catholic school, to take care of your kids' education in the faith. It's primarily your responsibility to live the faith and to teach the faith in the home. I, as a priest, and every priest can tell the kids where it's being lived in the home. You know, where the parents are going to Mass, you know, whether or not the parents are going to the sacraments and saying grace before meals and living the faith. Because it's not just enough to send your kids to Catholic school. Catholic school is very important, and it's a good supplement to what you're teaching them at home. And religious ed is valuable too, but it's only 1 hour a week. Your job is the primary educators of your children's faith. The Pope has called the family the first seminary. The seminary is the place where the seed is formed. And your home is where the seed of their faith is formed. You know, Francis de Sales wrote a great book called Introduction to the Devout Life, where he talks about the importance of spiritual direction. And basically, you are your child's spiritual directors when, from the time they're born until they leave you. You are their spiritual directors. So I encourage you to read the Introduction to the Devout Life, all about spiritual direction and prayer, because you're going to have to be directing the children in the spiritual life. So first and foremost, you're called to be men and women of prayer and to pray every day for your children. Don't let a day go by when you don't pray for your children, that God will watch over them and keep them safe and keep them close to Him. At the child's baptism, consecrate your children to the Blessed Mother at their baptism. If you've not done that, then consecrate them right now to the Blessed Mother's care. Teach your children how to pray, not only the formal prayers of grace before meals, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, the Act of Contrition, but also teach them how to pray from the heart. Teach them how to pray spontaneously. Teach them how to thank God. Like when you're going around saying grace before meals, just say every day, ask your child, what are you thankful for today? I've seen that in so many families, and it's just a beautiful, heartwarming thing to see, for the child to say, oh, I thank God for this or for that. And also, teach your children how to praise God and how to worship Him. Not just ask for things, but how to truly love, adore, and thank God. But most importantly in prayer is the Mass. And so it's the most important thing you can do is to make the Sunday Mass a priority, to make sure you attend Mass every weekend, not just, you know, 1 or 2 weeks a month, but every weekend take your child to Mass. And make Sunday a special day, a family day, a day of recreation, a day of prayer, a day of rest. Make it a special day. Maybe after you get back from morning Mass, have a nice breakfast or a nice brunch with the kids. Or once in a while, take them out for International House of Pancakes on Sunday, or to Krispy Kreme Donuts or someplace like that. Or if you go to Saturday night Mass, maybe once in a while, take them out for dinner, out for pizza after Mass. Doing a family thing can help the bond, the family bond, grow even closer. Many families will say the rosary or a decade of the rosary with the kids. They say a decade a day keeps the devil away. So try that a decade each night, a decade of the rosary. Now, confession is so important, too, that your kids see you going to confession. Go as a family. If your kids are old enough, if they made their first confession, take them, let's say, once a month on first Saturday and go as a family. It does them so much good to see their mom and dad go to the sacrament. Other things that are nice ideas would be, at Christmas time, have your manger scene and have a bag of straw. And whenever a child does a good act of charity or an act of kindness, have them put a straw in the crib, a straw in the manger. So when Jesus comes on Christmas Day, He has a nice soft bed of straw to lay His head, and filled with the acts of love and kindness that your child has done. Now, if the kids do something bad, they have to take a piece of straw out during Advent. And that way Jesus doesn't have a soft place to lay His head. I encourage you to use the Advent wreath during Advent, the Advent calendar, and then celebrate your child's baptismal days. For example, save one of their birthday presents and give it to them on their baptismal day. And it should be maybe a religious gift, maybe a little cross or a little medal or a holy card or a statue or a children's Bible. You see, that way the child not only will celebrate the birthday, but you can celebrate the child's baptismal day. And you know the baptismal candle that was given to you at your child's baptism? You should bring that out every year and light it. And, you know, sing a little song or watch the video or look at the baptismal pictures each year as they get older and give them a little religious gift. Another nice idea during Lent is that during the sacrifices that they make during Lent, you could do little ideas such as whenever the child does a good deed during Lent, they get to put a jelly bean in a jar. And then on Easter, they get the fruit of their labors. They get to eat all their jelly beans. Others, for Good Friday, during all of Lent, what they'll do is they'll have peas or beans. And whenever the child does a good deed, they put, let's say, a bean in or a piece of spaghetti, you know, in a jar. And that's what you have for lunch or for dinner on Good Friday. So the more sacrifices they've done to make the bean soup or the pea soup or the plate of spaghetti, so what we see is that there's little things you can do to help raising holy kids, trying to get these ideas across to the kids. Make sure in your home you have religious pictures, you have maybe the image of the Sacred Heart, statue of the Blessed Mother, maybe the Last Supper. These religious pictures in the home are very important for the kids to grow up and to see these in your home. Now, as far as teaching the children Bible stories, teach them especially the New Testament stories about the parables. And really the greatest image you could teach them is Jesus, the Good Shepherd. Because all of us are his sheep, and the children are the little lambs. And the Good Shepherd is Jesus. And that teaches a child security and the love of Jesus and how much he reaches out for them, and even when they stray, he gathers them up. There's no better image you could give your child than the image of Jesus, the Good Shepherd. Now, Montessori, Maria Montessori, a tremendous Catholic writer, I have some of her books back there, has a whole catechesis about the Good Shepherd. And because children want security, they want love, and that's what the Good Shepherd is all about, the love of Jesus for each one of them. Now, just to end with a few last comments about raising holy children, another idea you can give them is to teach them how to tithe. Tithing means giving 10% to God. And even at a young age, we should teach children how to give 10% to God. In other words, they can give part of their allowance to the poor, like almsgiving. One idea, let's say if your child gets a dollar allowance, instead of giving them a dollar, give them 10 dimes. And then you should have, you know, they get to keep, you know, 7 of the dimes. 1 dime should go to the poor, like maybe the Sunday collection or to the poor box. And then you should teach them from an early age to invest the other 2 dimes, okay? Invest 20%, give 10% to charity, and live on 70%. And that really is a great system, I found. Jim Rohn teaches that in his seminars, the 70-20-10 rule. And if every adult did that, no adults would be in debt if they could do that. Live on 70%, invest 20%, and give 10% to charity. And Jim Rohn says we should teach the kids while they're young to give a dime out of a dollar. Because when the big money comes, let's say they win the lottery and get $1 million, or let's say $100,000, and you say, well, do you think you want to give $10,000 to the poor? And if you've trained them young, then they'll be in this very generous spirit. So we have to start them early, so when these opportunities come, they'll be generous to the poor. Now, what about protecting your child's innocence? You know, your children, if they're baptized, they are saints already. Your children are saints already when they're baptized. So it's not that you have to make your children holy. They are holy. Your job is to preserve their holiness. Your job is to keep them close to God, to safeguard their innocence, and to safeguard their relationship with God. So you have to protect them from the dangers of our society. A lot of the things they'll see on TV can rob them of their innocence. Certain music that's out there, movies, Even watching certain news programs could also tell them things that they should not know about. Certain books that are out there. So realize that this is a great responsibility that you have, and God will hold you accountable for safeguarding your child's innocence. And so I encourage you to really take that as a very serious obligation and responsibility. Now, Father Hardin, the Jesuit, says that into the 21st century, he says that the average family will not survive into the next millennium. He says only above average families will survive into the next millennium. So you can't settle in just being an average family. Because if you're an average family, then 50% of the families in here will end up as broken families. So he says the only way that you won't be one of the average families is by becoming an above average family, becoming a heroic Catholic family, a heroic Christian family. So strengthen your marriage, he says, and some of the saints have said, some of the writers have said, that the best thing you can do for your child is to love their spouse, is to love their parents, you know, to love their mom or to love their dad. So I encourage you to try to strengthen your marriage and in the meantime, strengthen your family life. And above all, don't follow the crowd. Don't be part of just the typical average American family. Because into the next century, by the year 2010, the average family will be disintegrated and it will be broken up. So for you to survive into the next millennium, your family has to be a heroic Catholic family, above average family. And to do this, you have to use the necessary means, which is reading, study, prayer, listening to tapes, going on retreats, and talking to other parents. If you found families and parents that you're very impressed with, take them out for lunch or out for dinner and say, give me some ideas on how to do this. So read good books, and above all, pray for your children and do what you can, and as God's instrument, to raise happy, healthy, self-confident children that are also holy. God bless you. Hey, do we have time for a couple questions? See, is Nancy here? Sure, go ahead. There's a question back here. Okay, the four basic temperaments go way back to, you know, ancient philosophy, but they've been they're found in the back of, well, certain books. There's actually a book called The Four Temperaments, and there's also a book called by Florence Littauer, who's a wonderful Christian woman, a speaker. She has a book called How to Understand Yourself and Others. That's a good book. And I think she has one called How to Understand Your Children. And the four basic temperaments is choleric, melancholic, sanguine, and phlegmatic. The phlegmatic are the easygoing, laid-back kind of people. You know, they're the very sort of shy, reserved, friendly kind of people, good listeners. They usually wind up as, you know, counselors, you know, listening to people. The sanguines are the outgoing, life of the party, talkative. They're usually the ones that are into sales and are very good about meeting people. They're always the life of the party. Then the melancholic are the deep thinkers, those that are into like philosophy and music, and they tend to be very well organized and like things a certain way. And the choleric are the type A personality. The cholerics are the hard chargers. You know, the cholerics are the CEOs, the heads of the corporation, the leaders. And in one of the books, they compare these four temperaments to four different animals. The choleric is the lion, okay? The phlegmatic, the easygoing one, is the golden retriever. The melancholic is the beaver, the busy beaver. And the sanguine is the otter, the one that has a lot of fun, the otter. So Anything you can find out about the temperaments is great. I mean, a lot of the priests use this in confession, like Father Hardin and others have studied temperaments so thoroughly that when somebody goes to confession, within a few minutes, they can tell that this person is a choleric, sanguine, melancholic, or phlegmatic, and giving direction can be a lot easier when you understand the person's temperament. There's a great book, it's out of print now, called The Spiritual Life by Father Tanqueray. And in the back of that book, he has a whole chapter about the four temperaments and how they relate to the spiritual life. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked about that. Yes. Well, the 12 hugs a day, you know, maybe one when they wake up, one as they're going off to school, maybe one after they get back from school. I guess you have to use your creativity. And they're walking down the hall, say, come over here and give me a hug, you know. There's, again, I think that I don't think it necessarily has to be 12. I think that's just something to aim for. Like if you're only giving one hug a day, if you gave three hugs a day from now on, that might be one way to do it. Also, I forgot to mention that hugging actually builds the immune system. Gary Smalley, one of my favorite speakers, and he's a pastor and an international speaker on marriage, has done a lot of studies, and he said that when a person has affection in their life, like a hug from a spouse, they have less medical bills, you know, their health improves, their immune system is stronger, they can fight off infection and disease a lot more. So your kids will be healthier, your spouse will be healthier. And Gary Smalley said when he gave this talk, all the husbands began putting their arms around their wives because they want to reduce their medical bills. Zig Ziglar tells a story of a West German insurance agency who this insurance company did study over a course of like, you know, 180 years or whatever, a very extensive study, and found out that the husbands who had affectionate, loving spouses, who received a big hug and a big kiss before they went to work in the morning and had affectionate, loving spouses, lived an average of 5 years longer than the employees that did not have affectionate, loving spouses. So your very lives are at stake here. Then he also found that these employees who had affectionate, loving spouses also earned an average of $5,000 more per year. And the women like that a lot too. You know, that's an extra vacation, that's extra jewelry and extra clothes and all those nice things. So it pays off to be affectionate with your spouse and with your children. It shows them that you love them, it builds their immune system, it cuts down on medical bills, and it makes the other person feel loved. Yes. Good. Now I would say that if, as a teacher or as a daycare person, you know, giving them a hug is very valuable and I'm sure a great thing to build their self-worth, their self-esteem. But of course, getting it from their parents would be so important to experience their mom and dad's love for them. But and you can usually tell. Like at the school, when I go, like I spend every Tuesday at my school, St. Louis in Alexandria. If I walk into the cafeteria, a lot of kids just come running right up and want to give a priest a hug. And I've often found that oftentimes it's the kids that might not be receiving the affection from their parents, for some reason they just want to come up and give you a hug. So maybe that's the case in your daycare too, that a lot of them, maybe the ones that are more needy emotionally, are the ones that come running up a lot and give hugs. Okay, other questions? Yes, back here. Okay, I'll repeat the question. Question is, what if you have a child who instead of just giving 10% to the poor, gives 100% to the poor? Yeah, they get maybe $2 allowance and they put all $2 in the poor box. And so your concern is that they just are not sure, you're not sure why they do that? You're not sure why they do that? Well, that's a sign of a very generous person, of course, and I don't want to say not to do it in case the pastor is here, you know, for example, or, you know. I think it's important that you teach them how to use their money even from a young age. Like if you give them four quarters, say that, maybe what we should do is that you can go out and buy something with the 50 cents, but maybe let's give a quarter to the poor and the other 25 cents you can, you know, save in a piggy bank. So I think teaching them that from a young age is a very valuable lesson. So I'd encourage you to have them divide that up a little bit more. Okay. Let's see, another hand was back here. Yeah. That's a good question. As far as what can you do as the holidays approach that you can do with your children, for example, there are some different places where you can volunteer. Like when I was in Woodbridge, I just spent 4 years at Our Lady of Angels. We have St. Vincent de Paul Society. And a lot of the parents will go down there with their kids, and they'll help to sort out the clothing and help to stack up the canned goods and do things. So there might be a place like that, a good Catholic place where you can go with your kids and you can work side by side with them in doing something good like that. I'm sure some of you have other suggestions. Any other suggestions on that point? Anybody would like to make on what you could do? Yeah. Yeah, taking the kids to a nursing home will be good. See, my sister runs a Junior Legion of Mary out of the Catholic shop. You know, my parents own the Catholic shop over in Centerville. They have a Junior Legion of Mary and they visit the nursing home. And also they do a living nativity scene every year in front of the Catholic shop, which is nice. They dress up like sheep and like and angels and shepherds and the Blessed Mother and the baby Jesus and all this. So doing things like with the Junior Legion of Mary or nursing home visit, and you had a suggestion? Yeah, Mother Teresa's place is a very good part. Good idea down in D.C. That's very good. Yes. That's an excellent point. Adopting a family around Thanksgiving or Christmas, putting together a Christmas basket and maybe going over to the family and dropping it off or doing something like that is a great idea. Okay, good. Any other questions? Anybody, any other questions? Yes. Yeah, we were just talking about that with Diane. There's one called Character Building is it David Isaacs? Is that his name? That's a good book, Character Building. I forget the publisher, but I think a lot of stores would have that one. And a lot of the writings of Maria Montessori I have back there I'd recommend. Zig Ziglar's book, Raising Positive Kids in a Negative World, I like. I like Gary Smalley's book called The Key to Your Child's Heart. It's an excellent book. Jay Kessler has a book out called How to Survive Your Child's First 10 Years. It's also on audio tape. I'm sure Dr. Dobson has quite a few things about on that topic. And any other recommendations? Yes. The VeggieTales. Yeah, my nieces and nephews like those. I've seen them watching those. Yeah. Yeah, the Chicken Soup for the Soul books are very good. I saw one today in the bookstore there's Teenage Soul, also for kids. And for the Pet Lover Soul, those of you who are pet lovers. Okay, any other questions? Anybody else? Okay, well, thanks so much for coming out tonight, and we'll maybe say a closing prayer and I'll give you a blessing. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now, Almighty God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.